Hey, and welcome to Maybe It's Rocket Science, a place where we will come together to break down the complex issues prevalent in our society by inviting a variety of different viewpoints, many of which may differ from our own. My name is Gina Corlees, and I am your host. Hey, so for this episode, I'm hitting you with part two of our mental health talk. In this part, we still have the same lovely folks from last time, but now we're shifting a bit of our focus to the social side of mental health. So we're talking a little bit about social media, a little bit of a toe dip into trauma, resilience, acceptance, a lot of keywords that I hope that you take away from this. You know, all that good stuff. So let's go ahead and get started.
Touch on like with social media especially. I think that's such an interesting it's such an interesting phenomenon because I grew up and I didn't have any social media. Like, I had a very strict household and my mom didn't really want me to have it, and I personally am grateful for that. I think that that probably helped me avoid a lot of pressures, especially particularly in middle school and in high school. But, you know, as I got older and I got a little more freedom, and my mom obviously said, you know, you're responsible. I trust you. So I started an Instagram. I did it like just for art because I love art. I love to draw and paint. So I use it to just post my work there. And I noticed, like, I didn't think that anything would, you know, come of it because I'd never used social media. I didn't think I was going to become addicted or, you know, be, like, dependent on it or anything because I, you know, I hadn't had it in, for most of my life. But what was really interesting is that after a few months, just a few months of casual use, occasionally scrolling through, posting things, a couple weeks ago I realized just how powerful of a hold it had over me. That I was becoming really anxious when I, like, posted something. Suddenly, I was caring about things I didn't care about. Like, oh, why isn't this one getting as many likes or as fast, you know? And my friend told me about this, like a year ago. And I couldn't understand why she would care about something so trivial. But, like, now I can understand that it's almost like people's perception of you comes through with this number, but it doesn't take into account how everyone has their own life. And, you know, it's not actually what they think about you. Sometimes it's just like a half-minded double tap on the screen, and that's you getting your affirmation about yourself. And I didn't realize how anxious it was making me because I would check without even thinking about it. Like, I wouldn't even remember pulling out my phone and opening the app, but I'd already be there looking through my likes, looking through the feeds. You know, what are other people posting? Do people like my stuff? You know, and it's crazy because it's so deeply rooted within your own thought process and, like, you know, in how you perceive yourself. And it's very sly. It's very, like, you know, like, quietly. It just kind of slides in, and all of a sudden, it's just once in a while, you're like, oh, look, I got 3 likes this time. Oh, that's so cool. I didn't think 3 people would. And then it's like, oh, 20 likes. Oh, that's so great. And then it just, suddenly you start caring about it more and more. And I think that what really gets you is when you get a high, you know, response that gives you this great feeling of, like, euphoria. Like, oh, I can't believe it. Like, oh, people love me. And then you don't get as good of a response the next time. And now suddenly you're battling, you know, with yourself, like, oh, why don't people like me? You think, you know, there's no actual proper system that says, like, this will be good and this won't be good. Or this is right and this is wrong and this is what you should or shouldn't do. It's purely just, there are plenty of factors that play into it, but we don't take that into account. We genuinely think it's a representation of our worth. Even if you, like, go in thinking that, you know, oh, that's ridiculous, I would never think that. It's very interesting because it can just kind of sneak up on you, and then, like, all of a sudden now it has you, and you don't understand why you care about it, but you just do. And that was just so weird to me. I just, having gone through most of my life without it, I didn't realize how powerful it could be.
And it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
It happened so quickly. Mm-hmm. So actually, yesterday morning in our monthly Pookstu meeting, we watched a video. I want to say it was called something about, like, how social media is affecting your mental health. Mm-hmm. Something very simple like that. Mm-hmm. It was a TED Talk. And one of the wonderful concepts that I thought was so wonderfully put, she talked about the phenomenon of social currency that is pervasive on social media. Mm-hmm. And in this social currency, we are the product and we allow other people to give us our worth. And that's exactly what you just said. And it's so one of my fellow scholars said to me, as gently as she could, but it was clear. She was saying, well, you're old. What do you think? I think it has added a whole new aspect. When I was a kid, we had the same struggles. We had, you know, identity. Will anybody like me? And who am I? And what about this? And but we got away. We got to go home at night. We didn't have cyber bullies, right? We didn't have the need for constant exchanges, you know, day and night via text or whatever type of messaging. And I think that while we spent hours on the phone, and that was the phone that had a cord and it was attached to the wall and you had to turn the dial to dial the numbers, it really did exist. you know, there was a limit, at least in my house. You had a 10-minute limit because you had a house full of people. You couldn't constantly be on that phone. And so there were built-in limits, and it was still hard. And so I can't imagine the difficulty now of never being able to get away from that. And this, the insidiousness of this that creeps in and tells you this is who you are and this is what your worth is by what everybody else is saying. Again, we've always dealt with that. We always will. But this kind of never goes away unless you are a critical consumer and you take the choice to consciously step back and say, oh, this is what this is doing to me. Either I can continue doing it with that knowledge and just be more aware and think critically about it and not buy into it, or I can step away from it, or I can not even realize and just continue. And then there's a lot of things on that continuum in between, but it's a very, very real issue, a very real issue. And still a relatively new issue. It's a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of the history of the world, cell phones have not been around that long.
Yeah.
And all these issues that we are facing because of them haven't been around that long. And I think as a society, as a culture, we are still trying to figure them out. And we are starting to see some of these very real ramifications that can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's not inherently bad, but it can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we address this in part of our trainings of, we're just now beginning to learn about this. And, you know, social media, when it started, was a good idea. It was about connecting with communities and learning more and having more access. And, you know, too much of any good thing can have its bad side. I think that what we're learning is that this 24/7 access, just, you know, regardless of what you're connected to, but 24/7 access may be taking a toll on us. And in fact, you know, I talk about these two studies. One study had three groups. They were doing this sort of test thing. It was an experiment. One group could have their cell phone in the room with them, but it had to be face down, which is a lot of what we do. When you go to class or you're meeting, you put your phone face down. That way you aren't theoretically distracted by it. Second group could have it in the room, but in a bag. And then the third group had to leave their cell phone completely out of the room. The group that did the best on this test, this cognitive test, was the group that had it out of the room. The second best was the group in the bag. And the third that did far worse was actually the group that had it face down next to them. And so on some level, we're, even when we're not on our cell phones or our smartphones or whatever you want to call it, we're aware of it. And it's taking our attention. Another thing that they've determined is that the sort of mind wandering with media has us thinking about the future, the past, but very rarely are we, or a little less than half the time, are we thinking about what we're doing right now. And so this area of research is pretty new. Just the presence of it seems to be having an effect. Now, the other thing that you talked about was, well, what if you're curating your experience in a positive way versus a negative? That is very true. You know, the experience is very often dictated by the company you keep. But even those people who curate a positive experience online and do postings get negative backlash 24 hours a day. it's not something that we, you know, everybody over time has gotten hate mail. You know, if they're popular, and if you want to have an online presence and you get out there and put yourself out there, you're going to get some bad stuff back. And that has an impact on us. It used to come in the form of letters, but now it comes in the form of immediate posts. So I think it can be really good. You can curate it. And the question is, what are you surrounding yourself with? And how much are you surrounding yourself? Because if you're one of those people who is immediately accessible throughout the night, then now you're disrupting your sleep. Or is it getting in the way? It's all about function. Is it getting in the way of my relationships? Is it getting in the way of, you know, sleeping, eating? Am I ever just doing one thing at a time? So there are a lot of different ways to consider social media. And there are a lot of really good things about it. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Hit me with the good things. Where are we at?
Well, you know, the good things are that, you know, we have the ability to reach out and connect with people who have the same concerns or beliefs or hopes and likes that people who don't necessarily have access or the ability to get to be around other people who have shared values. You can do that online. You can get new ideas online. You can learn all sorts of stuff online and through social media. So that's all really good. You can get great ideas. And everybody has to decide for themselves. You know, what is the balance? I talk about balance a lot in terms of your own well-being.
Yeah. No, and I think some of the key things that I've taken away from what both of you have been saying is a lot of key words. You've used resilience, mm-hmm. you've a lot, and then you've used affirmations and mm-hmm. things like that, and they both can pertain to how we exist in this world, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the other keywords that should be included in as well within mental illness is also acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because mm-hmm. you get so resilient up to the point where you're just like, this is happening, and I recognize it, mm-hmm. and there's nothing I can do about it right now, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think even when you're looking for the affirmations or you're trying to find that resilience within yourself, even if it is on social media, you have to take a step back and be like, okay, this is fine. And a lot of people go through it and it'll be okay, you know? So mm-hmm. it's kind of one of those things where you have to keep reminding yourself, this is fine. This is okay. I'm going to be fine. And giving yourself those reminders, especially for people that do go through those mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. So when you were talking about affirmations on Instagram, all I could think about, yeah, I feel that. Because you know how they do at the end of the year where it shows you your top 8 photos or whatever that were mm-hmm. liked the most that year.
That is, and can I just say that is such a specifically designed tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To really capture you more deeply into social media. Right. Just throwing that out there.
Right. No, absolutely. And I was looking at mine from last year, and almost all 8 of mine, I think, other than one of my dog, were selfies. Mm. And I looked through, and even now, if I think about it, the most recent selfie I had, I think, had 98 likes, and I was sick. Mm. And then, and then, like, the next photo I posted was a trail or something. I got, like, 15 likes, and I was like, excuse me. Mm. Like, yeah. This is objectively better looking at it. So it definitely throws you off.
But it's a perfect illustration, right?
Yeah.
So even as an older person on Facebook, I can see that same kind of trend. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I post articles sometimes that I think are important in relation to mental health or just other things that aren't maybe necessarily so, that are more objective. Maybe mm-hmm. you use that word. That's yeah. a really good word. And those always get fewer likes.
Right.
Always. Where if it's just an adorable picture of somebody who's having fun and you're running kind of, it's your highlights reel. Mm-hmm. The highlights reel photos and posts always get more likes.
Yeah. Right.
Always. It does create a false reality. Mm-hmm. And then where does that leave mm-hmm. someone who's truly struggling?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing from that too is just that
you kind of start building like this tactical strategy. And I think that that's what makes social media so addicting, is that you spend so much time trying to figure out, okay, what is and what isn't, you know,
right. That's a great way to look at that.
And it's like, I think we as people and just as humans, we like recognizing patterns, and we use those patterns to try and benefit ourselves as best we can. So in life, that might be to help us survive, find food or find shelter. And now that might be to get as many likes as possible. And it's true. I mean, people make millions just teaching people about these patterns and these strategies and how to be famous, how to be a millionaire, you know? And it's like, that's what they're selling. So when you're in the process of making your strategy and trying to figure out what's, you know, what works on Instagram or what works on Twitter or whatever, it doesn't align really with reality. So your strategy for surviving on social media just kind of influences how you look at reality itself. And that's how I think that it's starting to warp each other. Like, it's like starting to reach out into the real world because people are behaving the way they perceived as appropriate on the internet. And those aren't the same things. They won't work the same way. In reality, we recognize, I think even some of the most, like, some people who are the most concerned with their appearance, I think can recognize that eventually their appearance won't be enough to get them through life, you know? I think when you accept reality, you can understand that even if you're very concerned about it. But I think on the internet, there is no such thing. I mean, there's always going to be a way to preserve youth, to preserve beauty, to, you know, promote and glamorize, you know, your appearance. And there is
filters.
Filters. Exactly. Absolutely. And there are no filters in reality, unfortunately. As much as I would like to wake up looking gorgeous, you know, with the makeup all done and, you know, cute little dog ears, I unfortunately, in our reality as it stands, that is not a possibility. And reality has, like you said, like built-in limits, and we can still go beyond those limits. So being in a place where there aren't really those kind of limits, you know, trying to integrate with that kind of reality, that augmented reality, and trying to apply it to real life can really hurt you, because you're not going to get the same results, and you're not going to understand why. It's just they'll always conflict with each other because they're not the same thing.
In the interview that I had with the scholars, we talked a little bit about resilience, and you mentioned that resilience is a part of what you teach. So do you think that having resilience when you have a mental illness is fully paramount? And what does it look like for those who have yet to develop this attribute?
Well, let's first think about mental illness.
Yeah.
You know, everything is kind of on a continuum. So everybody has normal fluctuation of mood, and we have both positive and negative moods all the time. And they sort of flow up and down as a matter of course. As you go down the continuum, you may find that the waves are higher and lower as you move toward more severe problems. And so as the waves move higher and lower, the degree to which you develop a skill to bounce back, which would be resilience, that's the definition of it, becomes more important. Noticing shifts sooner is a fine-tuning skill. And it would be great if we could teach people early on, and I think a lot of kids in school are learning this, how to recognize and name their moods, how to understand when they feel badly, that that's not necessarily a bad thing or a thing that will last forever. And they learn to tolerate what we would call emotional regulation or emotional shifts. And they learn to tolerate those and understand those and think of it in terms of riding waves. So if they encounter, you know, greater shifts, then the ability to bounce back is really important. So, you know, for example, if someone has a severe mental illness, let's just say bipolar disorder, manic depressive illness, or schizophrenia, something along that line. The treatment for those conditions relies on medication. Some of the psychotherapy treatment actually is focused on managing around the fact that you have this, recognizing shifts, being able to understand that taking medication is a really important part of managing the shifts and trying to stick to that. So is resilience important? Yes, absolutely. I think noticing small shifts in your well-being is kind of the beginning of that, and it takes practice. It's not a skill that we just get. You have to learn it.
Can I go back? Because you've mentioned acceptance a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I love the angle that you brought to it. So you were it made me think about mm-hmm. there's a form of treatment called dialectical behavioral therapy. And a part of that, one tenet of that is called radical acceptance. And that's kind of what you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Just, this is what it is. It is okay. And I will live through it. And so thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
That's excuse me, that's key and amazing and effective.
Right.
It can be so incredibly effective.
Works into even acceptance, where you have to be like, all right, this is happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to do A, B, and C.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a good bit of talk about mindfulness and acceptance. So
okay.
let's just contextualize it
yeah.
there. Mindfulness is paying attention. It's the act of stopping, paying attention in the present moment, noticing what's going on. The acceptance is, you know, we spend a whole lot of time trying to make something we don't want to feel go away. And often that's a futile thing. And so the acceptance is, you know, can I have this? Can I feel this? And continue to move in the direction of things that I value. And that would be, if it's really, really bad, I seek help.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, something I can manage and I've learned how to manage in a healthy way, I continue to move. And that's what I call the value direction, in my value direction. So you may have a day where, you know, maybe your mood is just not great. And you might continue to do the stuff that you know is healthy, that you know you value. Maybe it's going to school, going to work. It's taking you in the direction of where you want to be in your life. And you continue to do that even though you feel kind of crappy.
Yeah.
It's like doing stuff even though you have a cold.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I just want to stay in bed. Yeah, no, definitely. I kind of am curious more about how you guys really integrate the idea of mindfulness.
Oh, yeah.
So imagine, you know, what we have come to do is that we don't intentionally stop and take, you know, where am I? What's going on here? Noticing stuff inside, and we notice stuff around, but noticing where am I, what am I doing, checking in, and just being able to even just describe, this is what's happening with me. From a mindfulness standpoint, when we talk about overall well-being,
mm-hmm.
that stopping and noticing is the core skill. That's the core thing that we say. Everything else is rotating around this ability to stop. And I would call it paying attention. It's mindful versus mindless. And it's hard to do. And it only comes in moments. So I think some people might think, oh, it's meditating, feeling floaty, being on a cloud. Well, sure, it can be. But it's also stopping in the middle of being, you know, moving from one thing to the next, maybe taking a little less time on your phone and just taking a few breaths and noticing what's where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So we think of it as just basically the starting point, and that every so often, you know, throughout your day, coming back to the start, what am I doing? How, you know, what's going on? Okay, do I need to do this or do I need to do that to shift things? I think the thing that we could all use is compassion and kindness. So, I mean, I would put those two together, kindness and compassion. People who are mean to each other or other people are probably mean to themselves. And if we could all step back and wipe our windshield, if you will, and look at what we're doing, and think about if everyone around us were loved ones, would we want them to have access to caring and kind and compassionate care? Would we want them to have access to education and housing and safety? Yes, we would. I can't think if we viewed everyone as a loved one that we would want to see it any other way. So that kindness and compassion, yeah. If we could just stop this whatever is happening here,
yeah,
and just step back and be a little more mindful instead of mindless.
I wanted to thank the Pooksta Foundation for the ability to interview these scholars who do such amazing work with social justice and their commitment to civic engagement. Please share with your friends and family, and I'll see you back here next time. Be safe out there, folks. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. I would like to thank Studio Mass for our dope design created for the podcast, 47th Ghost for the music that you're rocking out to right now, and CU Devers Class Learning Media Lab for providing the equipment and spaces to record in. Thank you for listening, and see you back here next time.